Shrink Wrap Radio number 308, My Long Run of Synchronicity, with me, David Van Nuys, PhD.
It's Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is me. On this episode, you'll hear me being interviewed by dream worker Kelly Sullivan Walden, who was my guest on Shrink Wrap Radio number 301, about dreams and the hero's journey. She interviewed me for her podcast show, which is called The D Spot. That's D as in dreams, not G as in, oh my God, golly, gosh, gee whiz, and gee willikers. I'm going to assume you know my bio. If you're new to the show, you can always find it on the Shrink Wrap Radio homepage. Now, on to the interview, which has a big slice of my bio that's not on the website.
I've got an unbelievable guest today. I'm so looking forward to speaking to him. We're going to be talking about adventures in synchronicity. One of my favorite topics of all time. Anytime I talk about synchronicity or think about synchronicity, I feel like there's an electricity that starts to buzz around me. Life becomes more alive. And all of a sudden, I feel like the universe is speaking to me. And doors open up where I couldn't have anticipated before. And telephone calls happen from people I was just thinking about. And it feels like there's no more pushing upstream. It's just like this downstream, gentle, magical journey whenever synchronicities are mentioned. So we will speak today in depth about synchronicities and how they have affected and changed the life of my guest. And my guest today is David Van Nuys, PhD. We call him Dr. Dave. He's got this incredible podcast called Shrink Wrap Radio, which we will talk about towards the end of the show. But he's a professor emeritus and past chair of psychology at Sonoma State University, a unique department with an international reputation in humanistic, transpersonal, and existential psychology. David is also an experienced clinician, having practiced for many years in California and New Hampshire, as well as being a popular workshop facilitator for a number of growth centers in the U.S. and Europe. He served on the board of directors of the Division of Humanistic Psychology of the American Psychological Association, and he's the founder and president of OFE Focus Groups, a research consulting firm with a client list that includes a number of Fortune 500 companies, among others. David is co-author of the book, This is the Zodiac Speaking, in which he profiles the infamous Bay Area serial killer. Oh my God, I must find out more about that. It's a little scary, but I need to know about this. But beyond all of this, David has created several podcasts, most notably Shrink Wrap Radio, which is now in its seventh year with listeners in over 70 countries. And today we are going to talk about his very personal journey with synchronicities and with dreams. And I could not be more thrilled and excited to bring Dr. Dave to the D-Spot today. Dr. Dave, welcome.
Well, thank you very much, Kelly, and I really appreciate the setup that you gave to the topic of synchronicity.
It's
really a perfect framing, I think, for the conversation that we're going to have.
I think the first time I really got synchronicities, I was reading the book, The Celestine Prophecy, years and years ago, and I actually was reading the book and listening to it as an audio tape. That was, I think it was before CDs. That was how long ago it was. And as I was listening to it, as I was driving in my car, I would just, everything I would think about, I would see the billboards to come and reflect those thoughts. Every turn, everything that happened, I felt like I was in a field of magic, and I became from that moment on, hooked on synchronicities and what do they mean and what happens when we're in them. So those are some things that I'm really excited to explore with you. Do you want to tell me a little bit about how you first got introduced to the realm of synchronicities?
Well, I don't remember quite when I first heard the term, probably as I was getting into Jungian psychology, and a book that was very influential on me was, I'm going to forget the title of it, Boundaries of the Soul by June Singer. And so that's probably conceptually, that was one of my earliest contacts with synchronicity. But I want to share with you this wonderful story of a series of synchronicities in my life. And the thing that triggered it was you and I had spoken sometime back, or maybe I was listening to one of your shows, and you mentioned Betty Bethard's. And I realized, oh, that's a contact point between you and me that I never would have guessed.
Yes, yes, yes. She's written a wonderful book on dreams, and I think of her as someone that I definitely look up to and have a great deal of respect for. So, and we ran out of time for you to be able to tell us the Betty Bethard story. So now we've got time. So
yeah, well, I'm going to tell you this whole story, and I'll just give a little peek behind the scenes to kind of set it up to say that this whole story, really, the larger story is about the quest to find my biological father. I was raised by a stepfather, the only father I really remember. And as it happened, my life has had many interesting aspects and turns, as most people's have, I suppose. My mother married a black man, my mother being Caucasian and me being Caucasian. My mother married a black man when I was just a baby, and she had had an how to tell this story. She had an affair, actually, with a married man. I'll hang out all of our dirty laundry here. And
I love it.
Charismatic man who she was totally in love with, and who, when she sat me down to tell me the whole story, the way she reported it was, you know, I knew he was married and that he wasn't going to leave his wife, but I told him I wanted a baby by him. So I was a love child. So I'll pick up more of that piece of the story. And it's interesting that you've been talking about the hero's journey, because, as you know, that's also something that I'm very interested in, and integrating the hero's journey into the whole cycle of dream work. So that's another thing that we share. And I'm looking forward to being in your workshop at the upcoming AS Dreams conference.
Mm-hmm.
So the hero's journey starts off with a call. And I got a call, and it was at a time when I was in my doctoral program, and I was coming near the end of my doctoral program, and I sort of, you know, I didn't have a lot of confidence about where this was leading. I was being trained to be a clinical psychologist, and as I looked around at various jobs, I wasn't very interested in what seemed to be out there in terms of working in a prison or working in a mental hospital. And at that time, private practice, the way they taught us at University of Michigan was you didn't go into private practice until you had a lot of experience under your belt, you had gray hair, et cetera. So I really found myself casting about, what am I going to do? And some colleagues, some fellow students of mine were going to go to a meeting of the Association of Humanistic Psychology. Now, this is probably, some of our listeners weren't born yet. The time period that I'm talking about is around 1968, 1969. And there was, I think, one of the very first Association of Humanistic Psychology conferences. It was either the first, the second, or the third. This was a very exciting time when Fritz Perls and Ram Dass and Carl Rogers and Stan Grof and all these sorts of stellar figures were, Abraham Maslow, they were all being drawn under this umbrella of humanistic psychology, and it was a very exciting time. So I decided to join some of my friends on a drive down to this conference, and in the car ride down, one of them remarked that she was going to she was a little further along in the program than I was, so she was really seriously looking for a job. And so she said she was going to interview with a man from Sonoma. Now, I'd never heard of Sonoma, although I'd seen an article in Psychology Today where they showed various trends in psychology, and at the top of several of the trends was the word Sonoma. Now, this was the 60s, so I assumed it was a psychedelic drug. So I was wondering, where can I get some of this Sonoma? And my friend told me, well, this is a small college in Northern California, and it's relatively new, and they have a pretty wide open program. And they, among other things, they have a master's program in humanistic psychology. And so she was interested in applying for a job there. So I happened to remark, well, gee, would you mind if I talk to the guy that you're going to interview with? And, you know, I might be interested in this as well. So she said, sure, go ahead. So I did try to talk to this guy, and it was one of these situations where it was kind of like cocktail party time, and he was standing with a drink in his hand and looking a little blurry-eyed. And as I was trying to make my case, every time some pretty girl would pass by, it was a break for a big, long hug, and he would get into this hug-a-thon. And I just got irritated, and I thought, oh, what the heck? You know, I'm not willing to put up with all of this. And I just decided I wasn't going to try to deal with the situation, and that maybe I would put my resume in his box, and you know, if it was meant to be, it was meant to be, and if it wasn't, it wasn't. So I just kind of walked away. Later on, towards the end of this conference, something happened where there was supposed to be some kind of closing musical event, dance event with a kind of really square, old-fashioned band that was playing Guy Lombardo-type music, if people are old enough to remember that name. Uh-huh. And somehow I found myself in an alternative happening in the third sub-basement of the Silver Spring Hilton, I think it was, some big hotel like that, where there was a spontaneous gathering of people in a big circle, and people had turned trash cans upside down, and they were drumming, and somebody brought out a flute, and there was no leader, but there was a spontaneous communal circle. I had never experienced anything quite like it before. In fact, one or two people stripped off their clothes, and it was the first time I'd been in a situation like that with nudity in that way. And
for 1 second. I want to make sure I'm following you. So go back. So this is a circle. I want to make sure I'm tracking what you're saying.
A spontaneous gathering in a sub basement. You know, like way down in the bowels of the building. I don't know how I found my way down there, or how all these other people found their way down there. But here we were. And as a couple of people stripped off their clothes, it was interesting to me that it was in no way sexual. You know, because I sort of, my fantasies were, well, if I ever found myself in that situation, that it would be very sexually arousing, but it wasn't. It was more a statement of, this is my body, this is how God created me, and it's okay. And that was the message that came through to me really powerfully, without anybody saying that, without anybody making a speech. Well, So in this group that had no leader, we started humming, chanting, we sang Christmas carols. We sang camp songs. I mean, it wasn't near Christmas, but just anything that we knew in common, somebody, you know, that you would think other people might know, it would somehow get started and go around the circle. Well, I saw this fellow across that I had tried to interview with 3 days earlier. across the circle. His name is Gordon Tappan. And we had eye contact, and we just locked eyes, and we held the sustained eye contact for the longest time. And I think my recollection is we both had tears in our eyes. We were both moved both by the spontaneous happening. And now he was 30 or 40 feet away from me, so there was no conversation between us. But there was this incredible eye contact. And so that was my experience at the conference. I mean, I didn't talk to him, but I did leave my resume in his hotel box, as I had said I would. And about 2 or 3 weeks later, I got a kind of a pro forma letter from, I don't know if it was from him, but it was from somebody at Sonoma State University saying, thank you so much for submitting your resume. Very nice to meet you. Unfortunately, the position has been filled. Do let us know how things progress for you in the future, that kind of thing.
Right.
So about, I would say maybe about 6 months go by, and I'm really realizing now that I am going to get a degree here. I wasn't always so sure that I would get out of there, out of the University of Michigan and get that PhD, but now it was really looking pretty inevitable. And so again, I'm concerned about how am I going to find a job? And it just so happens that I had a clinical internship at the VA hospital outside of Detroit. Mm-hmm. And I had, on this particular day, there was an underground tape that was circulating at the time by Ram Dass. At the time, he was called Baba Ram Dass. And it was called One Man's Journey to the East, and it later became his book. There was a book by that title, and he described how he had gone to India. He was a Harvard professor with Tim Leary, and then he lost that job as a result of their experiments with LSD, and he went off to India, and he met a guru there who absolutely blew his mind and totally transformed him. So this was a very inspirational tape. And I don't know if you ever encountered his book, One Man's Journey to the East, I think is the title. So I was.
No, but I did read, wasn't it Be Here Now?
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe that's actually, that. I think that is what it became. I think that's really what it is, was it became Be Here Now. That told his whole story, right?
What's that?
That told his whole story of leaving Harvard and going to India.
I think that was his big book that was just monstrously successful and really brought meditation to so many people.
Exactly.
I believe it's Be Here Now. But
exactly. And I was already, studying yoga at that time, and I'm very interested in altered states of consciousness. I was doing a dissertation on hypnosis and meditation, which groundbreaking for that point in time, given everything that's happened since then. But at any rate, here I am at the VA hospital, and I'm playing this tape for the psychiatric staff of one man's, of what became Be Here Now, telling his story. And the psychiatrists are kind of stroking their chin, and they're saying, very interesting. It almost sounds like the man has had a good analysis.
Of course they'd say that.
Yeah, which would be the stamp of approval if that had been the case. And so I'm kind of racking my brains. My goodness, where am I going to get a job? With my particular set of interests at that particular time, with an interest in altered states of consciousness and spirituality and psychology, psychotherapy, how was I going to put all that together? And I thought, I remembered that Sonoma State and that fellow that I sort of met, and I said, what was his name again? Kind of racking my brain, and I was able to pull his name up, Gordon Tappan, and I thought, I wonder if they have a directory, an APA directory here at the hospital, because he might be in the American Psychological Association. So sure enough, I was able to find a APA directory in the hospital, and I found his contact info, And so I said, when I get home, I'm going to contact him and just see, maybe there's another job opening or something.
Mm-hmm.
So later that evening, when I went home, when I arrived home in the late afternoon, as I'm putting my foot on the steps, I hear the phone ringing. I go into the house, and I get chills every time I tell this story. I pick up the phone, and the voice on the other end says, "Hi, my name is Mac McCreary. You don't know me, but I'm the chair of the psychology department at Sonoma State University, and we have a job opening. And that's why I'm calling you. And it's not that we don't have any applicants or any qualified applicants. Rather, it's that we have too many, and we have ones that each faculty person is kind of pulling for their particular person that they want to have. And so we decided that we would break the deadlock by hiring somebody that we don't know. We would just take a chance on somebody that we don't know." He said, and Gordon Tappan spoke up and said, "Well, I met a chap who I think might work out." And he said, "So it's on the strength of that that I'm calling you now." And I told him, I said, "My God, I was going to call Gordon Tappan just now. This is either either an omen or the strongest coincidence that's ever happened in my life." And I said, if you offer me a job, I'm just going to take it." He said, "Well, send us some materials." And, you know, so I did send them some materials. And then I think there was a subsequent conversation. He said, "We'd like to fly you out here." But he said, "It's not so that we can look you over. Rather, it's so that you can look us over. We want you to feel good about it and to feel really, really sure about it." So that was amazing synchronicity number one. And I did fly out, and I was kind of turned off to it, actually, because I got together with Gordon, and again, there was everybody hugging everybody.
Oh,
and me kind of
funny.
Standing
oh,
on the
God.
Side. Yeah, and I looked like a real dude. I got all dressed up, and they were all casual. Shaved off my beard, got all cleaned up. And but it just seemed too, even though there were things initially that kind of turned me off, I thought the way this has come, there's got to be more to this, you know, this amazing way of getting brought out there. And so I took the job. Moving right along, after I was there, after I had come and, you know, relocated with family and so on in Northern California in the Santa Rosa area, and I'd been there for some time. One night, I saw some posters of a psychic, advertising a psychic in San Francisco. And the psychic's name was Betty Bithards. And I thought, well, that might be interesting. You know, this was at a time in my life, I think, when I was very open to a lot of possibilities. And I thought, well, I've never been to anything like that. So why don't I go and check this out? So I went down to hear her lecture. And, you know, and she was kind of doing some readings of people in the audience. And she said to me, she said, "I see your aura. You have a lot of green in your aura. I think that you must be a teacher. You'd be a wonderful teacher." And, you know, so I'm kind of, well, okay, that's pretty good, but I'm discounting that a bit, you know. I went to the University of Skepticism, a formal training in psychology at a place like the University of Michigan. Is the Academy of Skepticism. So I'm a tough nut to crack in some ways. I really have to be hit upside the head with a 2x4. And so, you know, so she did this rather interesting session, and it ended with a meditation. She said, "Close your eyes, put your fingers, your hands in your lap in a certain mudra with your fingertips touching, and allow yourself to bring into your mind the image of the highest being that you can think of." And so I'm thinking, let's see, there's Jesus on the cross. No, that's kind of, even though I grew up with that, that's not it. Ram Dass, no, he's just another guy. And then kind of spontaneously, without any real bidding, I'm not a person who does this kind of thing easily, I have to say, The image of Ho Tai came into my mind. Now, Ho Tai is the Chinese god of laughter, and you see little statues of him all over Chinatown. He's the guy with the big belly, his hands thrown up over his head. You know that? Have you seen him? Do you know the guy I'm talking about?
I think maybe I'm thinking of the Buddha statue.
Well, he's kind of a laughing. People call him the laughing Buddha. So that's the Chinese version is Ho Tai, and he's the one they call the laughing Buddha. And as soon as I got that image, in my inner vision, I just kind of I knew it was right. And it filled me with a kind of joy, such that as I drove home, I kind of laughed out loud the whole way. And the message—I sort of got a message from it, which is, you know, don't be so serious, take things lightly, get laughter in your life, and so it was just wonderful. Now, some time goes by. Maybe it may have been the next day or the next week. I don't recall, but the dean of the school I was teaching in, one of the, you know, colleges of the larger university, the dean calls me in, very nice man. I didn't know if I was in trouble or what. And he said, I'm just calling you in to see how things are going for you here. I know you've been here now for some months at Sonoma State and just want to know how it's going. So I told him, I said, well, you know, I went down to this psychic lecture, and it was kind of interesting. And I told him about my experience, and he said, you know, that's really interesting. He said, some years ago, I had a student who went to see a psychic, and her roommate had been missing. And the psychic told her that, in fact, her roommate had been murdered. And the psychic gave them information that actually led to the discovery. It turned out that the psychic had been right, and there'd been, you know, and the police were led to the body, et cetera. Now, I know that sounds kind of grisly, but I said, wow, you know, that's amazing. I said, you know, I've never seen anything such concrete proof like that. I would really like to see somebody who had that kind of skill myself. He said, well, you know what? Now, this is the dean, very straight-laced guy. He said, you know what? That student gave me the psychic's card, and I've been carrying it around in my wallet for years, sort of intending to go, but never had. And I'll tell you what, if you'll go see the psychic, I'll pay for your visit. So I said,
what?
Well, boy, that's a good, that's a good offer. Okay. So he gives me the card. And it turns out that the psychic, her name was Dr. Georgiana Segui, lived in Fairfax, a community not too far, a Bay Area community. So I went down there that day all kind of primed, and I wondered, well, what will I ask the psychic to kind of prove to me that she's real? And I thought, well, I don't want to just, you know, be so skeptical that I'm trying to trick her. I want to be sincere. And have a sincere wish around this. So I thought, I'll ask her about my real father, my biological father, who I never really knew, and is he still alive, and can I find him, and how, and that's what I'll ask him. So I go to the house. It's in a kind of suburban kind of development. Nothing pretentious looking about the house. And knock on the door. The woman who opens the door, it turns out, is her sister. But there in the hallway is the largest wooden image of Ho Tai that I've ever seen. So remember, it's that vision of Ho Tai that led me to tell the story to the dean, who gives me the card that takes me down to the psychic. And here's this life-size statue of Ho Tai in the vestibule. So, that was pretty amazing. So,
undeniable.
Yeah. So then I go in to meet the psychic, this very large, corpulent woman, kind of a little ditzy seeming. And so she asks, how can I help you? And I tell her, well, I'd like to find my father. And my biological father, who I've never known. And she said, well, was he Jewish? Because I'm getting my my rabbi's spirit guide. And I said, well, as a matter of fact, yes, he was Jewish. And so she proceeded to tell me that a number of things. She said, yes, he's alive. Yes, he would be happy to see you. He's been to Israel, and he's been living in another state. He has lived in a state that starts with N, and you'll find him within the year. So I paid her, I thanked her, went back out to my car, kind of thought about it, and I thought, well, I don't see anything really substantial to hang my hat on here. I could try to, you know, could I go to the Israeli embassy? I mean, I knew his name was Ed Robin. So that much I knew.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But I just didn't seem like I had enough that I was going to be able to track him down. So I kind of didn't think about it, didn't follow it up or attribute all that much significance to it as time went on. So most of a year probably went by. And then I unexpectedly received a letter from my mother. Now, I need to back up a little bit and tell you some other synchronicities here are that when I was an undergraduate at the University of Pennsylvania, I was really fell into the whole folk revolution, folk music, and learned to play the guitar. And my favorite music and musician was Woody Guthrie. And just loved everything about Woody Guthrie music, Woody Guthrie songs, and so on. It turned out, and I think my mother might have told me this, I'm not sure when I learned this, but Woody Guthrie, it must have been much later, that because I read Woody Guthrie's book, Bound for Glory. It turns out that that book was written in my father's house, and that my mother and father, they had their relationship, their affair was in Los Angeles, where I grew up, and that's where Ed Robin and his family lived at that time. And he was a kind of a cultural figure. He was a communist. So, as many intellectuals were during that period, and he got persecuted by Joe McCarthy and the House of Un-American Affairs Activities Committee, and like so many other people, kind of went underground and disappeared. And so this is what my mother told me when I was an undergraduate in college and I began to express a desire to find my real father. And she said, well, I'll try, but it's going to be hard. Because, you know, and she told me this whole story and how people were very reluctant. You know, if you went asking after somebody from that period of time, people were reluctant to say if they knew anything about anybody. Because he lost his job, it totally changed his career, I was later to find out. So I know this is a long and difficult story here, but I hope everybody's following.
No, this is
following.
Such a wonderful story. I'm hanging on to your every word. Keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
So here, one day, out of the blue, I get a letter from my mother. And in it is a letter to her from Woody Guthrie's wife, Marjorie Guthrie, who it turns out my mother had known and was friends with. I'll tell more as I go along here. Reading the letter from Marjorie Guthrie, which starts out, Dear Louise, sorry it has taken me 10 years to answer your letter. But of course, you know, it was under a big stack of letters to do, stuff that I had to deal with, and I'm sorry it took me 10 years. But of course, yes, I do know where Ed Robin is, and she gives his address. Now, his address, now you got to realize that this is like 30, 35 years after I had been born, after they had had their affair. He could have lived anywhere in the world, in fact, had moved all over the country, but the address that she gives is in Berkeley. And it's not at all far from where some of my friends live. And so this opened up like a a three-year-old place in me, like I was a three-year-old, and it was like, oh, my daddy, and felt like, oh, he's going to be rich and famous, and he's going to lift me out of all my problems, and just how wonderful it's going to be, and I had fantasies of how I would approach him, that maybe I would become a postman, and I would deliver his mail for a period of time, and then we would become friends, and then one night over chess, with Brandy's, I would remark, by the way, Dad. So that was the kind of fantasies that were activated inside me. In fact, I ended up sending him a letter saying, I'm David, your son by Louise, and kind of telling them details of my life and my graduate school history and all, and basically submitting a kind of resume, hoping that he would be happy and excited to meet me.
Yeah.
And various adventures ensued. His wife totally freaked out because his wife knew about that affair and was threatened by it. And when she saw the name, the return address on the letter, she freaked out thinking it was my mother trying to reestablish contact with him. So he met me in a neutral space in a restaurant, drove down and we met in a restaurant and started talking. And then later he took me back to meet her. Turned out, long story short, too late for that, but I bonded much more strongly with her than I did with him. And
you bonded
so it turned
out with him.
Yeah, more with her than I did with him. But here's some more synchronicities for you. It turned out that this father who I'd been questing for was all around me. Just the week before, I had had dinner with people in Tiburon, and it turned out that the man, a psychiatrist, was good friends with my father, unbeknownst to me. They'd known each other for years. Turned out I had master's students, adult master's students, who are also one master's student who is very good long-term friend with my father. I was leading student groups at Napa State Hospital, and it turns out that my uncle, my father's brother, that I had an uncle there who was the head social worker there for many years. I was in the Esalen catalog that year. I was leading a wilderness dream and gestalt therapy and psychodrama group, co-leading it with another friend. And it turned out that I had a half-sister in the same catalog who was doing dance therapy through Esalen. Turned out I have a half-brother who's also a social worker. Turns out my cousin and my siblings were taught to play the guitar by Woody Guthrie. Yeah. So all of these synchronicities. Now, and in terms of what the psychic said, yes, I did find my father in about a year. Or he found it somehow. It came to pass. And my father and his brother, my uncle, they had taken courses at Sonoma State about a year before I had come. They had done some encounter group stuff there at Sonoma State.
I've got to know, though. I mean, this story. I'm in tears. I'm so moved. This is so beautiful on so many levels. I'm just so curious about that first meeting as you're sitting down and looking at him. What was that like? And was he kind? Was he interested? Was he aloof? I have to know that about that initial meeting.
He was a kindly figure. He had a big bushy white mustache, white hair, a fisherman's cap. A bit of a belly like I do. he was warm and he seemed warm and friendly enough, but also a little bit aloof. And he had a little dog with him. He had his pet dog. And as we went to the car, he was going to drive me up to his house in the hills to meet his wife. And the dog didn't come when he called the dog to the car. So he said, I'm gonna start driving, and the dog will, you know, this will teach the dog to come. And so he starts driving off, and the dog does in fact starts chasing the car. So I'm looking out at the window. I'm looking out the window as this little white dog who's running as fast as he can, trying to catch the car, and he loses the dog. I'm having the feeling as I'm looking back at the dog, and I'm feeling like this man lets go of attachments too easily. Of course, I was totally identifying with the dog.
The dog. So he lost the dog. You didn't go back and find the dog?
I searched for the dog a little bit. I can't remember now if they ever did find the dog or not. But at least temporarily, that dog got lost. And I was totally identified with the dog. Now, he had suffered. He had been through a major depression.
Go ahead.
And had been hospitalized for it. So to some degree, I think by the time I found him, he may have been a bit burned out in a way. So because other people saw him as very charismatic, but he had gone through major depression around not having written the big book that he had always thought that he would write. He had been a writer. I'd carried the same cross around myself, so this was of great interest to me. And let me move on, and then I'll come back to say a little bit more about him.
Great.
Okay, the conclusion of the story I'll just come to.
Please.
More or less the conclusion. We ended up going to, my family and I got a chance to trade houses and jobs with a professor at the University of New Hampshire. And so we ended up going away for 2 years. But by this time, things with that side of the family had kind of cooled down. I mean, they lived an hour away. I kind of thought, you know, well, what do I do now? Does this mean, you know, do I now have to go have Sunday dinner with this family every week or what? You know, I hadn't been that close to the family I grew up with. What was I going to do now with this new one? And they probably had similar feelings. So somehow we just drifted away. I was gone for 2 years. When I came back from New Hampshire, one day I'm sitting in my little office where I was doing psychotherapy at the time in our house. And one day I turned on the radio to the local PBS station. Now, it was already tuned to the local PBS station. I turned on the knob, and the voice came on and said, "Ed Robin died today." And then I turned the radio off. And that was it. And that was the end of the circle. And that was that. It felt like a full circle had just come to a close.
On the local PBS,
was he famous enough
for people to know who he was?
Yeah, he was enough of
book?
A local figure to get announced. And he had actually finally written a book about his experiences with Woody Guthrie, and he had started doing a one- or two-man show telling Woody Guthrie stories with a musician. And was enjoying some success, and then I guess he died of a heart attack. The family didn't contact me to invite me to the funeral or anything, and I didn't follow up. Somehow, I guess there's some residual. I mean, I don't know what I expected, but there was some hurt, some disappointment, some sense of loss. So,
even though you were able to close the circle, he wasn't the ideal father that you perhaps hoped or
it felt like he could have been, but I just didn't feel as fully embraced. I wanted him to be excited about me and my accomplishments, but he knew so many more accomplished people that I wasn't getting the feeling that I was more than just a little blip on his radar screen. So I think that was the place.
He probably just didn't have the capacity, being depressed and kind of a bit maybe self-absorbed in his own pain.
Yeah, that was my wife's take was that I was better off not having grown up with him, that he was pretty narcissistic and self-involved. Now, there's one more thing to squeeze in here that really does complete the circle.
Please, Dr. Dave.
Just this past week, I was interviewing a Jungian analyst. As you know, I do lots of interviews like this, and I have several kind of
website for Shrink Wrap Radio in the chat room right now. There's been a lot of activity, by the way, in the chat room along this conversation. Oh. I'd like to presence it before we're done, but I'm going to post this website. Okay, go ahead. Having an interview with a Jungian analyst.
Yeah, and I've had I've been following threads of my own interest. So there have been lots of interviews with Jungians and Jungian analysts, and as well as positive psychology is another strong thread. Mind and body has been another strong one. Neuropsychology has been another strong one. So at any rate, I'm having an interview with one of my favorite Jungians. And something she said somehow triggered in me a recollection of a dream, of a lucid dream. I haven't had that many, quote, big dreams in my life that I could remember without consulting my dream journal. I keep a dream journal, but the number of dreams that I could recall off the top of my head are maybe two or three or four, not very many. Well, this one dream popped into my head from years ago, and I suspect it was from before all of this whole account that I just told you. I suspect it was from before finding my real father, although I haven't had time yet to look back in my journals to see if, in fact, it was. But I think it was. So this dream that I had many years ago, in this dream, I am an actor in a play. And there is a phone on the stage, and as part of the drama, the phone rings, and I pick it up, and I think I'm supposed to, you know, act like I'm talking to somebody on the other end of the phone, but that in reality, there wouldn't be anybody on the other end of the phone. But when I pick up the phone, in fact, there is somebody on the other end of the phone, and it is my now dead stepfather. Who raised me and who was really the person I experienced as father all my life. And he's saying to me, the circle of your existence is about to come to a close.
Oh, my God.
At that point, I become lucid. And as happens to me, the few times I become lucid and in the lucidity is the awareness of, oh, my God, this is my dead stepfather talking to me, and this could really be him from the other side. And as happens to me with lucid dreams, as soon as I realize I'm having a lucid experience, I get so excited that it wakes me up. So I woke up.
Right.
Well, what to make of that message, though? The circle of your existence is about to come to a close. Well, you know, these many years later, I'm still alive. So, you know, at one level, one could have gotten frightened and thought, oh, boy, this means I'm about to die.
Right.
You know, or is it something else? Well, what I realized just this past week when I was interviewing this Jungian, I had this insight, oh, my God, because I had talked about this experience as I've shared this story with other people over the years of this set of synchronicities, finding my real father, I've talked about it as a circle. And that when I turned on the radio and Ed Robin died today, that was kind of the feeling I had inside was the circle has closed. And now I have the perspective that dream, that was the circle, and that in a sense, it may have been my stepfather blessing even my quest to find my biological father, who he could have perhaps perceived as a rival. So now you can talk.
How divine.
That's the end of my story.
Perfect to receive that dream from, to have him be the mouthpiece of that information, the father figure that was in your life, give you that blessing.
And the other thing that it illustrates is that we may not fully understand a dream at the time, and its real significance may emerge much, much later, like years later in this case.
So the timing of you receiving that dream, that was after your biological father passed away. Is that correct?
Yes. No. That was after my stepfather passed away, but probably before my biological father passed away. In other words, I think the dream was before I discovered my real father.
Biological father, so that part of the circle had been complete.
Later, years later. So the dream was kind of predicting something that was to unfold in the future and blessing it. And that realization, that understanding of the dream, I only had last week. Even though everything else that I've been telling you is now like 10 or 20 years or 30 years old.
Oh, wow. Well, I love that this newest piece just came in last week, and then here we are getting to talk about this. May I offer one little piece that feels kind of magical to me about that dream?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I interviewed not that long ago Chief Golden Light Eagle. He's a Lakota chief and a big dreamer. And he talked in bizarre ways about his perspective of dreams. And he was talking about when your karma is complete, even though karma wouldn't be necessarily a Lakota term, so I'm kind of using my own words here, but when it's complete, then your dreams take on a different dimension. So it's like who we are when we still have lots of karma and baggage, what we dream about would be very distinct from who we are and what we dream about once we've put all that to rest.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like at that point, as that circle is complete, then a whole new circle can begin that's a bird of a completely different, a horse of a different color, a bird of a different feather,
different
kind of existence is possible with this whole new amount of bandwidth that would then be available.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Definitely. I do feel like the whole father quest. I do feel like the whole father quest circle is pretty much completed. You know, there were ways in which I think I was looking for a father in other older males and so on, both ambivalently looking, not looking, approaching, pushing away, that kind of thing. But it feels like that's no longer, it doesn't have that numinosity for me that it used to.
Interesting. I might be interested about, I am interested in what could happen now with your biological father on the other side, along with your stepfather, and what kind of guidance or information or insight you might receive from them. I know that there was a woman that I recently spoke with whose mother, she always had a very strained relationship with her mother, in this life, very, very difficult relationship. And now that her mother's on the other side, even though it's taken a while, there's this new relationship that's forming as it seems that her mother is evolving and becoming a bit more enlightened. The communication, telepathic communication, dream communication seems to be increasing in its levels of harmony and love, and something, a more beautiful relationship is kind of possible to be born, so it seems. So perhaps your father, your biological father, will have some availability to be able to support you and recognize you in ways that he might not have been able to while he was here. Perhaps.
Well, I'll take that as a hypnotic suggestion and let it percolate and let's see what happens.
I want to presence a few things in the chat room. Celestial B, my Celestial co-host, has been talking about some of his feedback about all of this. First of all, he said somewhere that he lived near Sonoma State and had an interesting connection with that. I can't find that. It's way back there in the chat room. But he said that find it interesting when something happens in life and a long-ago dream comes back to him. I think in three dimensions, when a circle is complete, it means that you've moved up the spiral. So perhaps that's another hypnotic suggestion, that you're moving up the spiral.
I definitely resonate with that. I do have that feeling. And, you know, I recently retired from Sonoma State, and in hindsight, I have to say that I felt absolutely led there, and that it turned out to be, you know, I can't imagine another place that would have been as good a fit for me.
Oh, it sounds like you found true north.
Yeah, I think so.
So in general, in the last minute or two while I have you here, I know you've got your podcast, Shrink Wrap Radio, that we want everyone to listen to. I've listened to probably a dozen of your interviews, and each one is chock-filled with insight, and they're entertaining as well as insightful. And I know that there's CEUs that people can get if they listen and perhaps write up a summary. Fantastic. Is there anything else you want to say about your show, for professionals,
if they're MFTs or psychologists or psychiatrists or social workers who need continuing education units, they can get them just by listening to selected podcasts, and the information is all there on the site. I have to say that when I started this podcast series 7 years ago, and it was right pretty much at the beginning of the whole podcast thing starting to happen. I started in 2005, which is really the year that it started, although I certainly wasn't the first person. I was a little late in 2005. But I wanted to kind of open up, I wanted to interview people, and I wanted to expose the world to kind of a broader view of psychology than people tend to get in most psychology departments, a more Catholic, if you will, view of what's possible in psychology. And I didn't know if there'd be an audience or not. And it turns out there is an audience, and it's just been so well received. And if my memory were better, I would have learned a lot. I think I have learned a lot. But
it's absorbed. It's past the level of the logical mind. It's in yourselves. I love the subtitle or the tagline of your show, Shrink Wrap Radio, all the psychology you need to know and just enough to make you dangerous. And I love the Irish guy who says it, all the psychology you need to know and just enough to make you dangerous. If you want to know more psychology and some interesting information that will give you tons of insight and make you a little dangerous, then go to shrinkwrapradio.com and find out more about my amazing guest today, Dr. Dave. You are such a fascinating guy. You've made me, as I've been listening to your stories, of this incredible synchronicity. I love that you have paid such attention and that it weaves together so well. It's caused me to really remember some significant synchronicities in my life and appreciate them so much. So as I let you go, I'm going to ask you one quick question and see if you can answer this in 30 seconds or less, and then we'll switch gears and talk about the reward stage of the hero's journey. What is a synchronicity? Why do we have them? How can we have more of them? See if you can weave that in 30 seconds. Ready, go.
Whoa, 30 seconds. Well, I think synchronicities are the universe's way of letting us know that there's something bigger going on, that we don't see the whole picture. But for me, it's a reminder that there's a bigger story going on. And it's also, to me, I take it to mean I'm on the path. So I think if you want more of them, if you kind of turn your attention to the path, to your path, and if you turn your attention to your inner world, such as meditating or tracking your dreams, then I think you're more likely to have more and more of them coming into your life.
I highly, highly agree. Dr. Dave, Shrink Wrap Radio, you are a gentleman, a scholar, a brilliant heart and soul filled man, and I so appreciate you. David Van Nuys, PhD, Dr. Dave from Shrink Wrap Radio. I hope that we can do this again sometime, and maybe I'll get to share some of my synchronicities with you next time, and we'll just keep going back and forth forever.
That sounds good to me, and I really appreciate this opportunity to share my story. Well, I had to overcome my sense of self-indulgence to bring myself to share this with you. And I'm a bit embarrassed by all the uhs and ums I heard as I listened back. I'm hoping you didn't find them distracting. As if you hadn't heard enough of my story, there's a bit more I just have to share. You recall that I went to the psychic who had a big statue of Ho Tai, or the Laughing Buddha, in her vestibule? And you'll also recall that in addition to telling me I'd find my father within a year, and as you know, that did happen, well, also she said he had been to Israel and that he had lived in a state starting with N. Well, it turns out that he had been to Israel and that for many years he lived in a state starting with N, Indiana. Now, clearly Indiana starts with an I, but from an auditory point of view, it definitely starts with N. Skeptics among you might think that's a bit of a stretch, but as a longtime student of the unconscious and dreaming, that's how the unconscious works, making those sorts of transpositions. I thought you should know about those other two hits that the psychic made. And by the way, for whatever it's worth, I've never consulted another psychic since then. I might also mention that the psychic suggested I might be interested in a magazine that was titled Psychic, which she gave me a copy of, and which then led to another amazing journey, including my becoming a reviewer for that magazine, and eventually an offer to write a syndicated column called Your Sixth Sense, which I did for a year or two. Okay, here's the last piece. I was lying in bed a few nights ago, my mind wandering a bit, probably thinking back on this interview, and I got a totally new perspective on meeting my biological father. At the time that I contacted him, I think he was about the age I am now, which is pretty far along. And I found myself wondering what would be my reaction and my family's reaction if a young man suddenly showed up on my doorstep today reporting he was my son from some long-past liaison. I realize it might be a large pill to swallow, both for me and my family. I guess realizing this, I had a much stronger hit of empathy for my father and his family than I had back when that event happened. At that time, I was just so overwhelmed by my own perspective and enthusiasm of finding my lost father. And now, for the first time, really, I'm experiencing it a bit more from their side. Let's see, that understanding only took 30 years or so to sink in. And I'm a psychologist, right? Interesting, eh?
Looking for a way to make it personal and thank Dr. Dave? You can by paying it forward. It's easy. Just go to the Shrink Wrap Radio homepage and click on the big green donate button. You can donate a little or donate a lot. But be sure to remember to donate to keep the programming in the green and in your ears.
Thank you, Sherry West, for that lovely promo. And thanks to all who have clicked on that big green donate button and those who will do so. I recently heard from Heather Gout on Facebook, longtime listener and supporter, and also the voice with the beautiful British diction that you've often heard in our opening introduction in the past. I've shortened up the intro so you haven't heard her in a while. She also hosted her own very fine podcast, Spiritual Not Religious. As she wrote to say, her podcast is on hiatus, but she's written a sci-fi novel in the form of a free ebook. I haven't had time to read it, but I want to help her publicize it by announcing it here. I'm sure she's done a fine job with it. You can download her free ebook from www.smashwords.com. And the title of the book is Shen, S-H-E-N, and her pen name for the book is Heather Douglas, and that's spelled D-O-U-G-L-A-S-S, two S's. A listener in Sweden alerted me to the problem he was having downloading Shrink Wrap Radio episodes 238 through 243, downloading them to his computer. As I looked into it, I discovered that indeed a problem had crept in when I last updated WordPress and PodPress. After some effort, I was able to fix that problem. In case any of you also experienced it, you should now give it another try for those episodes. Finally, I want to alert you that I put new social media sharing icons at the top of each episode on the Shrink Wrap Radio website. And over on the right-hand sidebar, you'll find new icons for social media following. I hope you'll use the sharing icons to help spread the word about Shrink Wrap Radio and grow our listener base, and the social media following icons to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, if you're not already doing so, and especially that you'll click on the Google Plus button there and open up your own Google Plus account if you don't have one. Then we'll be able to do some group video chats using their video hangouts feature. We still don't have enough followers for critical mass yet. By the way, the reason for changing the icons is that the page was loading slow with the older set. I think it's a lot faster now.
Hi, this is Holly Kenley, married to family therapist, author, and speaker, and you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Holly Kenley, in fact, will be my next guest. I think I've run too long to read listener emails this episode. I'll try to get to those next time. So you can send your emails, as always, to shrink at shrinkwrapradio. You can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. You can leave voicemails on Skype, where I'm ShrinkPod, and you can leave voicemail on our phone at 206-337-0622. Don't forget, you can go to the Apps tab on our site for information about getting our iPhone/iPad/iPod Touch/Android app, and you can contact me directly through that. Thanks to fellow podcaster and dream worker Kelly Walden Sullivan for giving me the opportunity to share my story of the long run of synchronicity, culminating in the finding of my biological father. I really appreciate the way she held my story, and I hope to reciprocate sometime in the future by giving her an opportunity to talk about the role synchronicity has played in her own life. I'm sure she'll have some powerful examples to relate. My next show will feature Holly Kenley, MA, a California licensed marriage and family theo, a grow our listener base, and the social media following icons to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, if you're not already doing so, and especially that you'll click on the Google Plus button there and open up your own Google Plus account if you don't have one. Then we'll be able to do some group video chats using their video hangouts feature.